Okay, so before we get into like the thicker materials, we're going to talk about 16 guiding principles, or the guiding principles of this course. So the history of these guiding principles were, once upon a time when I was first starting this out, I taught a 4-hour yoga class to try and explain all of recovery in 4 hours. And I started out by just really pulling together things that were important to me that had made such a difference for me in how I approached my own sobriety. They were things that felt revelatory and revolutionary. And so I think there were probably 5 or 6 to begin with. And then over time, it grew to 10. And now there's 16. And so this is probably like a 45 minute to an hour long worth of material, just going over all of the guiding principles. But it is so important. And it's important because we go into this with a lot of misinformation, right? So we go into this with being fed an idea that recovery is terrible, that only really fucked up people get addicted to alcohol, and that sobriety is a lifelong, you know, like white knuckling affair. We have all of this stuff, like we're supposed to be able to tolerate alcohol. We're supposed to be able to enjoy alcohol. Quitting alcohol is like a total bummer and a life of deprivation. And there's all of this stuff around it. And so the way that this kind of works is we come into this and most of us don't want to be here. I think all of us don't want to be here. I don't know many people that just like run sprinting into deciding that they're going to give up alcohol, like so excited. But this really starts to kind of like lay this baseline for us, to undo some of this stuff, some of these false beliefs. The beliefs that we have about recovery, addiction, and alcohol absolutely change the way that we will be moving through not only like the full course, but also the way we move through sobriety, the way we move through life. Another piece of this too that's really important to understand is that most recovery modalities, most stuff that we have out there that teach us how to quit drinking are really, they're patriarchal. They're top down. The like AA and a lot of the offshoots of AA are built off of like an egomaniacal privileged white guy from the 30s. And so that is like the archetype. The world is his. He, you know, like, and he is like, he is sick because he thinks he's all powerful and he needs to get his ego and his ego in check and be humble and be broken down. And that's fine for that archetype, but the archetypes that we cater to and the archetypes that this is written for are people that don't need to be broken down, that are typically oppressed by the archetype which the recovery materials are made for. So what this means is that this is a really bottom-up approach that assumes like a feminine quality is present. Okay, it doesn't mean woman, it just means feminine archetype is what we are catering to, or catering to any person that's been historically marginalized or underrepresented. And so here we start from the bottom up and we assume that you are suffering not from having such freedom in the world and are not somebody that's just been above the law, but somebody that's been stepped on by the law and somebody that hasn't had a voice and somebody that hasn't felt safe and somebody that hasn't been believed. And so what that means is instead of smashing you and trying to break something you don't have, we work from a place of building up and assuming that you need to feel like you have a voice and you're allowed to use it and you'll be believed when you do. We move from a place that assumes you don't have good boundaries and you need to build those boundaries. We move from a place that believes that you are afraid of breaking rules, that you are taking care of everyone else and not yourself, that you need to develop a sense of self, not have your sense of self destroyed. We don't believe that you in powerlessness or any of that stuff. And so because the patriarchy has persisted for thousands of years, but also because AA has persisted for about 100 years, and then it informs most modalities. There's a lot of different modalities that are out there, but even you know, some of the more progressive ones still have this element of like, shut up and listen. Follow these like rigid rules. Don't break them. Don't question. So even some of the more progressive elements like that are out there, you know, like Women for Sobriety is like one exception I can think of that was really built like for like a feminine archetype. And so we, because of this, like because AA has really set the tone for what we talk about and how we approach people, this stuff is important because it's not just challenging your own beliefs. It's also going to be challenging the beliefs of your partners, your friends, your families, your doctor, your therapist. These guiding principles give you the platform. They give you they basically give you the foundation to build it upon. So as you're moving forward, you can, you know, and somebody says, admit you're powerless, and you have the words to understand why you're not going to admit that you're powerless. Or when somebody tells you that you're doing it wrong, you have the words to explain why it's okay to trust yourself and that sort of thing. And so these are, again, I will say it again and again and again, these are really important pieces to the puzzle. This is not just a throwaway part of the course that you can skip through. This is like the course. This is why it exists. And these are principles that not just are meant to guide you and really like filling yourself up, but are also meant to guide you through the program and also meant to guide you through a life where you're not relying on numbing out and alcohol in order to move through it. And so for all of these, go through them once, write down things that pop out to you. If it pops out to you, that means it's probably something you need to think about. You know, go through them again and again. There's a workbook that a written workbook, so you can read the words as you're moving through them, but return to these again and again and again. Some of them will be super applicable right now, and some of them will be applicable later. But these are for you to come back to and to really help you guide through the next, you know, the next 8 weeks, but also beyond. Okay, so guiding principle number one is like the most important thing to remember throughout the course, and that is that it's about extreme self-care. Well, I used to call this extreme self-care, but that just sounded like extreme sports. It's about mothering ourselves, and that's a really important concept because most of us, whether or not we've had kids, understand what mothering is. And so again, like coming back to this idea that the primary audience here and who this is built for are those of a feminine archetype. Like, you take care of other people. Most of the people that are coming through this course, I feel really, really guilty when it comes to taking care of themselves. And that's because we have been trained to serve. Like, our entire worth is built on our ability to serve others. And so we know how to do this, and we know how to do this so well that we totally leave ourselves for it. Another thing that's kind of important to understand from this as well is that, like, people that struggle with addiction are often labeled totally selfish. People that are just like, you know, like when I was going through my own recovery, my sister and my mom, you know, because I would show up high to things like, you know, my mom's birthday or miss things because I just was so fucked up. There was often this word selfish that was thrown at me. I was not selfish, and we are not selfish. We are just trying to live and trying to keep our shit together, and we're doing whatever we can. We're in pain. And so this idea of selfishness, we come into this kind of already bearing the weight of that word and other people saying, well, you're a terrible mother. If you were a good mother, you wouldn't be drinking. That's so selfish. I mean, like, tracking it back to the beginning of when recovery started and like really started to be provided on a mass scale through like AA, women weren't even considered alcoholics. They couldn't have been alcoholics because it was insane for people to believe that a woman would ever, you know, give up her womanly duties of being a mother and serving her kids to like drink alcohol. Only men could do that. And that's like a true fact. Women were not considered alcoholics because it was so insane to be able to picture a woman that would potentially do something like that. So we have this heavy baggage coming in. If we have been drinking wine while we're making dinner, getting through life or whatever, typically we're thinking already we're selfish and that engaging in something like this is like additional selfishness. And this is not selfishness. This is like learning to take care of ourselves. When it comes down to it in the world, there's one person that's going to make sure, like, that really has our backs, one person only, that really makes sure that we're taking care of ourselves, and that's us. It is only up to us, and it only will be us at the end of the day that makes sure that we are taken care of, that we're healthy, that we're attended to, that we're loved, that we're accepted. We go out and we try and get all this stuff from everywhere else. The only place we can actually get this is from ourselves. And so we start coming back to the beginning of this. and start to give this to ourselves, learn to give this to ourselves. And this is huge, because what happens when we take care of ourselves is that there's enough of us left to take care of other people. We start giving to ourselves the things that we so naturally and effortlessly give to other people. We start actually speaking to ourselves the way that we speak to our kids or to our cats or whoever it is. Like, treating ourselves the way we treat other people, we start actually turning this inward. Something magical happens, which is that we find that we have so much more to give. Like, it is like so much easier to be a generous person when we're generous with ourselves. It's so easy to be a caring person when we're caring with ourselves, because we start to like basically put money in the bank that allows us to have something to hand over. Guiding principle number two is that fear is great. And this seems like kind of simple thing, maybe, I don't know. But like, for most of us, we run from fear. We don't really turn into our fear and lean into it and work with it. And for me, this was a very true statement. I had never looked at my fears. I was terrified of even naming my fears. And one of the first things that I did at like 2 months in was something that's called a fear cleanse, which just required me to sit down and actually start to write out all of the stuff that I was scared of. And I couldn't stop writing. I wrote like 43 distinct fears. I was afraid that I was a terrible daughter, that I was about to fail, that people would find me out, that I was going to die of addiction, that I had liver disease, that I had cancer. I mean, I could just like go on. And I was just like, and I'm afraid of this, and I'm afraid of this. And it was the first time I had ever actually stopped and like started to like excavate. Before that, my whole life was like, I would start to have that feeling. I could feel it bubble up and I'd be like, oh, that thing. And that was when I would drink. That is when I would smoke pot. I couldn't stand to do stuff like doing the dishes. This was like a very specific thing for me. If I was sober and doing the dishes, it was just this time when all this stuff would come flooding in and I would be like, no, can't. And so we have really good mechanisms at keeping the fear at bay, because we think once we look at the fear, it just will consume us and swallow us. Fear is this like incredible thing that is there and present that is showing us like, I mean, it's just showing us the truth, right? It's like showing us on some level what we want. If we're terrified of quitting drinking or that we might fail, that is a really good indication that it is important to us to try this thing. If I'm afraid of writing a book, that's an indication that I really need to write a book. Fear is this like thing that kind of comes up and it shows us what we want. All of those fears that I had listed out, like way back when, all those things, I was afraid of being a terrible daughter. I was afraid of failing at work. I was afraid of dying. All those things showed me these things matter to me. Living matters to me. My family matters to me. Being sober matters to me. So fear is great in that one, this gives us the opportunity to like actually look at it. We stop here and we actually like start to pull it apart and we start to ask it questions. Why am I so afraid of this thing? Why is this thing such a big deal? And then it also gets us to like, allows us to start working with it in a healthy way when we're not running like from fear, we're actually like moving towards with intention. And so it also then gives us this other way to like start working with it and start to understand what's really important to us. And so here, when we stop running from it and we start basically asking what it is, fear comes to me and it's like, don't go on that stage. Like, you're going to fall on your face. And I have all this fear around like potentially public speaking, which is like, I'm speaking about something that I'm terrified and that I know I'm going to have to do at some point. It's just because it's so important to me, right? And so the fear story might be, if you do that, you're going to fail. You're going to embarrass yourself. And here I might be like, I hear what you're saying, like, but I'm also like, got it. I'm also not going to let you run the show, right? Like, fear is this thing we turn and face. And when we turn and face it, we stop allowing it to dictate things behind the scenes and telling us to run faster, telling us that like it's all going to fall apart. We stop and we look at it. We can start to uncover it. Okay, I have this fear because I know I'm going to have to do this. And also this is important to me, but then I can also like start to deconstruct the story around it. And when it just exists there, it's not pulling the strings, right? So guiding principle number three is death by a thousand cuts. And also perfection is the death of success. So when we say death by a thousand cuts, so most of us come into this, and this might sound familiar to you. I had this like old habit of being like, on Monday, I'm going to start my life and it's going to be perfect. And I would have all of these plans to like wake up at 5 a.m. and I would go to the gym and I would do that every day that week. I would also stay within my budget, eat the perfect amount of calories, go to work on time and have like, I'd get, I mean, I just like had this like grand idea that like starting next week, I would hit it all perfectly and I would do it all perfectly. This keeps us stuck because like what would happen is obviously I would set like these impossible expectations for how it was going to look. And then come Monday morning or Tuesday, maybe I would keep it up till Tuesday. It would all fall apart, right? And alcohol's wrapped up into that narrative too, because I'm like, I'm only going to drink on Saturday nights, you know? And then, you know, there I am on Tuesday night and I've blown my budget already and I didn't work out or I snoozed or whatever it was. Then I went out with my friends and drank. And so, and I'll start next week, right? We create these really big plans that are so impossible for us to pull off. And it just keeps us stuck in this cycle of like trying to do it all at once and never doing anything at all. Perfect is not how things get done. Everybody that I know that has gotten sober did not get sober because they were perfect about it. They got sober because they kept trying when they fell on their face. They kept trying the next thing. They throw a little bit of yoga at it or throw some running at it or go to meetings or go like whatever it was, read books. But it wasn't like this perfect formula. It was just like, I just kept at it and I kept on working at it with it. And also along the way, I started to dismantle my perfectionism. Worth wasn't like based on it being this like perfect thing. Worth was just based on the, you know, the contribution, not the contribution, just the trying itself. So principle number three, death by a thousand cuts, and perfection is the death of success. Guiding principle number four is realize you're not going to learn everything. All right. So this piggybacks nicely onto guiding principle number three, which is where we think that we have to do everything here. We think we have to learn everything. And that's the only way that it's going to happen. You're encountering so much material here. It's going to blow your fucking mind. You will read so much and you will learn so much. And also at the end of it, like, you're only going to have read like maybe an eighth of it or a tenth of it or like a 25th of it. This is like a lifetime worth of work here. This is so much stuff to sort through and to build on. There is like, we're presenting to you, right? Like trauma and like 1 hour worth of like trauma work. People make careers off of understanding trauma, and you can take just that alone and go on it, you know, on with it forever and dig into it forever. And so this is like meant to be a primer course. That's meant to give you exposure to things that are the most important to you at this time. You might move through the material again. And maybe right now this is like understanding, you know, the brain science behind addiction is the most important thing to you. Well, guess what? In like 6 months, 2 years, it's probably not going to be the most important thing to you. Maybe at that point it is understanding trauma, or it is like figuring out your nutrition or whatever. We're going to have different things that mean different things to us at different points in our own path and our recovery. And so the most helpful thing I can tell you here is that just remembering you aren't going to learn everything, nor are you expected to. There's no degree at the end of this. There's no graduate program at the end of this. You could literally cycle through the same stuff again and again and again and create a different course for yourself every single time. The way that I like to kind of like, the good analogy that I have for this is just like, imagine that you're picking up a book. And a good book I recently read was Homo Sapiens. It's like a 400 page book, and it's so long and complicated. I remember three things from it, right? The book changed me. It made me smarter. I got what I needed from it. And I read the whole book too, by the way. And I only remember three things from it. And this is how things work. All this course is built upon remembering like three things from here and there. And so that is how our mind works. The things that like really stick to us are the things that are meant to stick with us at this point in time. So you can kind of imagine like you are at the beginning of this, you can imagine you're taking like a bag of sand and you're pouring it through a hole in the ground, and like a tiny hole in the ground, and you're dumping this big bag of sand. Some things are going to get through. Right? Not all of it, but some things are going to get through. And the stuff that's left on top, you can come back to and you can filter it through again, right? Like you can continuously come back. But just the main point I'm trying to say is remember the stuff that sticks is the stuff that you're ready to receive at that time. And the stuff that matters to you at that time, the stuff that interests you, and you're not going to learn everything. And so it's just not even worth trying, right? Make it fun, not miserable. Number five is that we have to do the work. So all that being said, don't be a perfectionist. And also remember, you're not going to learn everything. You still have to do the work. you're coming from a place where you have prioritized addiction, and that's not a bad thing. It's what got you through, but you prioritized alcohol and probably other, you know, toxic behaviors that brought you down. And for a lot of us, we just can't even imagine finding the time to do all this stuff. You found time to get fucked up. We all found that time. We found time to take ourselves down and make ourselves sick. In this phase here, in this phase where we're turning back towards ourselves, we have to do the work. We have to put in the time. It is not like bare minimum. It is not like, you know, just 5 minutes a day. What we put in is what we get out from this. And that's as like as simple as I can put it. Again, you don't have to do it perfectly. You don't have to do everything. You do not have to make this another like weapon against yourself, but you do have to show up and you do have to find ways to incorporate things that are going to make you healthy. It is not going to come from just reading about meditation. That's not how you become a good meditator. It's not going to be about just reading about like brain science. It's not going to be reading about how habits are formed. It's actually like taking some of this stuff and doing some of the practical exercises in order to incorporate it in your lives. It takes more work up front. At the beginning of this, you are going to put a lot more time in than you're going to put like 4 or 5 years down the line. And that's just important because you're creating new habits and you're also countering, you know, where you are at right now. And so it is going to take more of a time investment. It is going to take more of an investment into like understanding things and applying them. Creating new habits does take a lot of energy. This is not forever. Remember, you're not going to have to put as much into it at this at a later point as you are now. But you do, again, like you just have to do the work. You have to put in the time. And that is what pays off. Guiding principle number 6 is willingness is the way. And so willingness is like this like kind of underrated concept of how to get from point A to point B. And so if you kind of think about it, we're going from this place and we're like, okay, so we know alcohol is bad. We hate hangovers. We don't like how it's showing up in our lives. We don't like what it's doing to us. And also like, that's like one thing we can kind of get clear, but you know, maybe we're not entirely clear that there's no benefits that alcohol provides us. So kind of being in this place where we have been drinking, where alcohol has been important, and then getting to this place where we're saying, I'm never drinking again. That's like two pretty far ends of a spectrum. And for us to be able to cross over from this place where we know alcohol is not really doing us any favors to this place where we never want to drink again. We don't just go, I'm never going to drink again. Because first of all, like that's a cognitive statement, but remember that we have a survival, an old survival brain, or you don't remember this, but we'll be talking about this in the course. When you're looking at a human, like in a human brain, there's three different brains. There's a cognitive brain that can make up its mind pretty quickly and say things pretty quickly. There's an older brain, our limbic brain, which is our emotional brain that moves a bit slower. And then there's our even older brain, our reptilian brain that moves really, really slow. And that's connected to our survival instinct, which we'll be talking about down the line about how this is all connected in. But what that's just saying is you can say something really flip, but like getting your emotions on board with it. And then also like getting like your older parts of you on board with it is not just like this. It takes time. And it also takes like an intention towards something. Willingness is the bridge between this isn't working out and I never want to do it again. And so we say instead of I'm never drinking again, or I'm never having a glass of alcohol again, which can feel like really oppressive and terrifying, and also something we might not be able to stick with, we say, I'm willing to never drink again, or even I'm willing to quit drinking, or I'm willing to try this out. I'm willing to heal myself. Willingness is the thing that we put in between where we want to be and where we are. So willingness is the way. Be willing to try this program. Be willing to take a break from alcohol. Be willing to try meditation, even though you think that you're the one person in the world that can't meditate. Be willing to repeat a mantra, right? It doesn't mean you have to be fully on board. It just means I'm willing to do something differently. I'm willing to do this thing. And our willingness really truly does lead the way. When we just say, I'm willing to do this, that's all we need. Like that's all we need to show up is a willingness, right? It's just like, it's this like small bit of enough that's like so much and carries us through really difficult stuff. Guiding principle number 7 is that it's about finding your willpower and not giving it up. So powerlessness, because it's baked into the first steps of AA, where we realize that we're, you know, we admit that we're powerless over alcohol. There is this extension, if we're powerless over alcohol, then we're just powerless. And that's been appropriated and like thrown all over people all over the world that are trying to not drink, which is that remember your powerlessness, as in remember you're just a powerless individual in total. It's been something that has been said to me multiple times. Whenever I have said I am powerful, people have reminded me kindly that I'm powerless, and that's my problem. And so for a lot of us, like, we're going to talk about two different parts here. The first is like the powerlessness around alcohol. That was the intention of the 12 steps. People fuck everything up. So they take something and then they just like run with the idea, and then they just use it to like lock everyone else up with it. But the intention in AA is just to say, I realize I can't drink. Like, that's what this intention came from. That's the interpretation of it. I'm powerless over alcohol. The way that I like to look at it is, and we'll get into this in a second, I just know I can't drink. Like, it's that I know if I try and drink that it's going to fuck my shit up. And so it's not like me sitting there and just saying I'm powerless over alcohol. It's just that I know when I drink alcohol, it robs me of my power. And so that's the one piece of it. The other piece of this is just like understanding what power is and how it's used in the world. So power is this thing that we absolutely tie in with authority, with money, with your standing in the, like, power is this, like, it's this external thing that only a few have, and they have it typically because of class, society, and also like how much money they have or their place in government or their place at work. It's this thing that we're consistently striving towards to try and have, because we've been told our entire lives that having more external power is like the way for us to be happy and successful, right? This is the way the world works. This is not about addiction. This is about how humans work. We are all conditioned in this way to like basically chase power, because we think the more we have of it, the safer that we'll be, the more important we'll be, the more loved that we'll be. This is the part where we actually say fucking bullshit. That's not how it works, because that stuff never fills us up. It actually never fills our cup up. It keeps us caught in a lie that everyone else is caught in. This is about awareness, right? Addiction, recovery, or any sort of healing recovery, right? This is about like the awareness of where true power comes from. And our true power comes from actually like basically not believing the lie that we've been sold, and understanding our true power comes from within. True power is something that Gandhi had or Nelson Mandela had. It's something that is so far within us and absolutely like perfect in of itself already. It's like it exists. It's just something we actually have to tap into and understand that we have. It's something no one can take away from us, right? No one can beat our own power out of us. Nobody can actually like rob us of our power, our true power. We can be tricked into believing that. We can be abused into believing that. And it is the truth for almost all of us walking into this course. We walk into this believing that like we are not as powerful, we're not powerful beings. My whole entire path has been about a reconnection to how powerful that I am. So that's what this is, right? This is a remembrance that what we're trying to get is back in touch with this part of us that is like eternal, can't be dimmed, can't be touched by anything external. It's getting in touch with that like source and that like fierceness within us that like that just always is. And we get there again by turning away from using external things. Alcohol is this way to like train reach for power, right? If we use alcohol, if we find this thing that releases us from our suffering, that allows us to have sex, that allows us to socialize. If we like reach for this thing and use it, right? Like we think it gives us power, and it's like remembering, it's starting to understand we don't need to rely on these things external to us to be happy, to be free, to be liberated. So that's what this is. It's just getting it right and understanding your real power, your true power, is something nobody can ever take from you. And that's what we're unlearning, this thing about like this idea of power that the whole rest of our society, like, just, you know, so fully believes. Principle number 8 is surrender. Surrender is one of these really tricky things, because it is something that's imposed on people, especially like oppressed people. And it's almost like an oppressive position, right? Like I'm surrendering, I'm handing over my power to somebody else. So this kind of tracks back to the last point that we're talking about. But surrender is a really individual thing. What we're talking about here is your own personal surrender to what is, And almost like I like to think of surrender as like handing over and also like minimizing resistance. So surrender to me is more about breaking up the facade that we've all been sold, that we're supposed to be perfect and keep it all together and have white picket fences and be able to cook dinner at 5 p.m. and keep our 401ks and the, whatever it is. It's like actually calling bullshit on that. The way that surrender works for me is in the like the cliched stereotypical way of like just knowing what I can handle and then also giving up the things that I cannot handle, right? So for me, that means that like, for instance, if like, I don't know, if I'm trying to, let's say like sell a book, that's a really weird one. Let's do something more practical. If I'm afraid that like some guy's, you know, not going to call me back, I can sit around and I can try and, you know, maneuver my way around making somebody interested in me or make someone love me. I can try and pull all this shit, or I can just let it go and like hand it off and be like, you know, like, you know, like to me, it's like God or universe, like you deal with it. I am not going to deal with this. I'm not going to sit here and hold on to it so tight and try and manipulate it into working for me. It also to me is like, just being honest about who I am and where I am. I can't do it some days. That's surrender. Some days I cannot do it. And before I used to hide it or drink around it. And these days I'm just like, I can't do it. I need a break. I need help. Or it's just telling people I'm depressed today. I can't get out of bed, or I'm anxious, or I hate this, or whatever. It's being honest. To me, surrender is like vulnerability. But this is a really important part of this. We have to ask for help. We have to know what things to let go of, what things to like let move, what things to stop holding on to and manipulating. We also have to like realize that like manipulating is also manipulating the way others see us and not trying to hold up that facade, because that's killing all of us, right? It's letting that guard down so that people can see our humanity and other people get to be messes too. It's allowing ourselves to be a mess. Guiding principle number 9 is about, it's not about not being able to do something. That's so weirdly put. But what that means is that this isn't about not being able to drink. This is not, you've not lost your drinking privilege. You have not fucked it up and like lost your ability to have your one glass of wine. This is a privilege in of itself. It is a privilege to have realized that you have a problem with ethanol, which is what we use to fuel rockets. It's a privilege to be forced into a path where you actually have to engage in self-awareness. Most people go through the rest of their lives and they don't question it, just because they have it easy, quote unquote. It's like the dull ache versus the sharp pain of self-discovery. So there's two things that this is a privilege, right? Like this is, there's two ways that this benefits you. One is that you don't have to, you learn that you cannot consume ethanol, which is a good thing to learn that you can't consume. It is a highly toxic, carcinogenic substance that robs people of life and kills 3 million people around the world annually, which is about half as many as kill people around the world annually from cigarettes. So it is a super destructive drug that you have discovered that you can't drink. And that's the privilege. That's the privilege, is being able to be sensitive enough to not be able to tolerate that. The other thing is that it's a privilege to be forced into self-discovery. Like, we don't want to move here. We want to stay in our comfort zones with our kind of shitty friends or our kind of shitty job or our whatever it is that we've like on some level settled for that might not be bringing us like this like true sense of being alive. You're forced into a path that makes you grow and evolve and question things and ask for more and leave things behind that aren't working for you. So this is the privilege. It's not about not being able to do anything. It's about being able to do something that most people like resist doing. Guiding principle number 10 is that it is knowing what you cannot fuck with, right? So piggybacking off of number 9, which is it's not about losing your drinking privilege. It's about having awareness. And this awareness extends to understanding like, I can't fuck with alcohol. That is the thought that we go off of. It's knowing what you can and cannot do. And so this translates beyond alcohol. So it's not just about like not being able to drink. It's also just having this like amount of self-awareness of what other things we can't do. So to me, this is liberation and this is freedom, right? Like for me, I keep a running list of things that take me down, okay? Like things that take me down are pot, they're cigarettes, certain relationships, certain friendships, certain familial relationships, certain behaviors. And so for this, like I keep a running list of things that I don't engage with because every time I do, it sucks me of my power and my joy and my ability to function and all sorts of things. And so instead of saying I'm an alcoholic, which you are welcome to say, you get to call yourself whatever you want. But instead of saying I'm somebody that like can't drink anymore, what you're saying is I'm somebody that has realized I'm like somebody that has come to, what you do say is I'm somebody that has realized I can't partake in this behavior that fucks with me. I don't do this thing anymore because it costs me too much. And you then can add on to it, start with alcohol. And my list started with alcohol and it's grown to about 15 things. And the other side of this is that you also get to have a list of things you can fuck with, okay? And that's really fun. Knowing the things that like are bad or whatever that you can do that don't totally, you know, take you down is like just like it doesn't mean you have to eliminate all the good things in your life. I have plenty of things that are terrible for me that I can do that don't totally take me out of the game. That like the point of it is just like knowing, right, what you can and can't fuck with. To be really clear, if you're in a program like this, alcohol is one of those things for sure. And you will go back and forth and try and say, maybe it wasn't that bad, especially as you go further on. You wouldn't be taking a course like this. You wouldn't even notice a course like this existed if you didn't have some rub with alcohol. And yes, that extends to people that have like a glass a night and that feels bad for them, or people that just binge once a month. It extends to anybody that has any sort of awareness around how shitty alcohol feels. So guiding principle number 11 is failure is inevitable, so use it wisely. All right, so there is a lot of baggage around failure and recovery. Anywhere else, failure is like this grand thing that like places like Silicon Valley or Business Love. There are companies that literally like have like failure porn on their walls of like all the things they did terrible because they like believe they are made from failures and that failing is like the sign of like great daring. And then you come to addiction and failure is the one thing you should not do. It's called relapse. It's called going back to the start. Anywhere else, failure is moving forward. Here, it's going back to the start and you lose all your cred. And it's crazy. It's a construct. It's not true. You're going to fail on this path. Everybody that tries to quit drinking, like, or tries to do anything that's as like big of a deal as this is going to fail. It's a hard thing to do. It takes a lot of practice and training and all sorts of stuff. So you're going to make mistakes along the way. So it does not mean a couple things. One, it doesn't mean you like lose your days. If you're counting days, you don't have to count days. Like you might be that kind of person, but you don't go back to day one. Because you can't lose any experience that you've had. Nobody actually can come to you and take away the experience that you've gained or the growth that you've gained. You like create a new awareness around it. Like you actually are evolving through this process. Even if it feels like you keep making the same mistake over and over again, you're growing. That is like, it is impossible to not grow when you're on a path like this. And it's not a zero-sum game. It's not only all the good stuff that you've done that add up to your worth. It's like, all of the stuff that you've done adds up to your evolution, even and especially the like things that feel terrible and the things that feel like mistakes. The point is, when we get to a mistake, it's to not like use this as an opportunity to beat ourselves up and make ourselves feel like shit. We use our mistakes and our failures here. Like either one is a fine word to use. I failed, I made a mistake, whatever, move on. But we use these as moments where we can really like dig into it. So if you went out and you drank and you didn't mean to, this is a great place to be like, why is this happening to me? What's happening around that time? What can I do to like combat it? Or what can I do to strengthen? Can I not go into that situation again? Could I maybe like, was I stressed out? Was I not like, you know, taking care of myself, whatever? Like, it's just giving us this opportunity to really like start to track back and like dig in and really get down to the bottom of what's making us need to leave ourselves or what's making us drink. So failure is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for us to continue to pull ourselves, like, or to pull like the story apart or the pain apart or whatever it is. So that we can grow from it. right? Not so we can use it to tell ourselves that we're pieces of shit and shouldn't have made a mistake. It's natural, right? It's a chance for us to not beat ourselves up. Guiding principle 12 is try everything and show up empty. And so this is another really important one. There's a lot of stuff that you're going to encounter. Like, I was really against going to therapy. I had a terrible experience when I was 17 with a therapist, and I swore off of it for years. I absolutely did not want to try AA. And while AA wasn't my path, I did check a meeting out. It did give me the information that I needed, or I checked many meetings out, but like, it gave me the information that I needed to make the decision from. There's lots of weird stuff that you're going to encounter. Like, I learned to read tarot. I started going to psychics. I did something called laughter yoga. I danced in the morning. I repeated corny ass affirmations over and again. Like, there's all sorts of stuff that's going to come at you on this path. And it is so important for us to just kind of go with it and try something if it's not going to harm us. And we'll talk about that in the next point. But like, it's so important for us to like expose ourselves to things we normally wouldn't, and even people we normally wouldn't. I am absolutely somebody that is terrified of people. And especially like at the beginning of this, like, didn't quite know how to be in groups sober. I also was somebody that made myself go and hang out with people sober. And so like, try everything, show up empty. And then from there, like, once you've experienced it and witnessed it, right? Like, that's when you get to make your mind up about it. And you will be surprised. Things that you thought you would hate, you might end up totally loving. Number 13 follows onto it is trust your gut. So like, I have to caveat what I just said about that with the part where it is so important too for you to listen to yourself. Like, going back to the AA example, I did not feel like AA was my path. I tried it. I showed up empty. You don't even have to do that, by the way. I want to be really, really clear on this. Our guts, like, so that kind of like that voice within us that like knows, that's smart, that's wise, like that's in tune with our bodies, and that's kind of like our soul voice, is so much smarter than our head voice, our cognitive voice, our mind. And so if our gut is like saying, you know, like a really good example, this is such a good example. I got into an Uber like over in November, or not even Uber, it was a Lyft. I was in Fresno. I was with my mom, and something about the whole thing was just so off. He didn't have a back seat in his car, and like, he like immediately got into, like, I got into the car against every single instinct that I had, stupidly. And then the entire time was pretty sure that the guy was just going to pull off the road and murder me. Which he didn't. But I immediately started like texting my mom and being like, something's wrong, put me in, you know, like start tracking me on GPS and whatever, and started doing all the emergency procedures that you do when you think you're going to be murdered and raped. And so the bottom line is, I got into this against every instinct that I had, and my instincts were right. The guy was a fucking creep. It was a terrifying like 20 minutes, and I'm surprised that I'm alive. But it was just like one of those things where we have all of this intelligence, and it's just like right there. And so oftentimes, especially when it comes to recovery, especially when you think other people know better than you, especially when other people think they know better than you. I mean, recovery is this thing that we come into. And if we say that we're addicted, or we say we have a problem with alcohol, a lot of people all of a sudden flood in and they're like, oh, well, you can't trust yourself. Your ego is out of control. Do what I did, or do what my Uncle Fred did. And people will insist they know better, or insist that they know the right way for you. And a lot of the stuff that you're going to be asked to do and pushed to do is going to feel like no, right? That is like so important when you hit that. This isn't just, I don't really want to go to that yoga class, it seems weird. This is like, no, this is not right for me. I don't want to do this. And when you get down to this, or yes, I really want to do this, this is important for me, I feel like I need to quit my job or whatever it is, it's important for you to understand and to start to really get in touch with what is like the head voice. The head voice is typically lying to you. It's typically full of shit. The gut voice is the voice that absolutely knows what's going on. It's the thing that is the most in touch with your truest part. a lot of you are going to listen to me say this and you're not going to understand how to really tell the difference between the two. And that's okay. The easiest and the first way is to understand when you've got the full, no. Like that's the gut voice, right? You also, as you get more in tune with yourself and you start on this path, you start to learn to distinguish between the voice that's lying to you and telling you all sorts of bullshit. The voice lying to me was like, don't embarrass this man, get in his car, right? That's my cognitive voice. And my gut voice is like, run, jump. My gut voice is like, open the car and like roll out. But that's like, these are very, very obvious things when you're in a situation like that. They can become a lot more subtle, but we get in tune as we go on this path and we have a lot more self-awareness. We start to like get in tune with like, oh, okay, that's my gut voice. And you'll be exposed to it. Trust, like give it time. But like, just remember this piece here though. Trust your gut. Trust what's right for you. You will be told you don't know what's best for you. That's crazy. Of course you know what's best for you. You're you. You're the only person that's living your life. Number 14 is enthusiasm has a half-life. Okay, this is a really important one to remember too, because as we go through this, something called fading effect bias takes hold. Fading effect bias is this really great mechanism that our minds have to keep us from remembering the most painful parts of our life. So right now, if you've ever broken your leg or broken a bone or like cut yourself really deeply, no matter how hard you try, you are not going to remember how painful it is. Like try it for a second right now. Think about something that was really painful to you. You're not going to remember like that screeching level amount of pain. Like when you like, you know, even like a paper cut, you can't remember how bad it was. And that's because our brain has this really good mechanism that keeps us from carrying around all of that level of pain. And so for us, like as we move on in time, our brain basically like covers it up and it softens it up. So we can't remember how bad it is. The other thing is that the brain has this like really good effect of like keeping us, almost like it's called like nostalgia. No, it's not called nostalgia. Our brain has a really good way of keeping us like, thinking things were better than they were. That's what's called nostalgia. Nostalgia is like thinking, it's like when I think, and you'll hear about this in like the daily mantras when I write about stuff, I'm like, oh, that was such a good time when I quit my job and I had no money and I was staying on my friend Jeff's couch and I couldn't get up at 11 a.m. I will think back on that time, which was so depressing, and I'll be like, that was a really good time. And so that's nostalgia. So we have these like two things that are at work for us, which is we tend to paint pretty the past and we tend to forget how painful it was. When you're quitting drinking, you kind of enter it at first and you're really close to the horror. You're really close to the pain. And also you are like, you're not in the nostalgia, like you don't have a ton of nostalgia around your drinking days yet. But as you start and you still have, everything is still intact. You haven't, you know, your friends haven't stopped inviting you to things, which most likely will happen. Your relationship with your partner hasn't had that tension potentially. You still have things, right? You still have like everything is pretty close to the way it was. And then what happens is you start moving through this, you get far away from the pain. You start to think like, God, those were really good. Like you start thinking only good things, like the nostalgia of like being out drunk at like 2 a.m, you know, and you know, with like without your credit cards or your ID in a broken hill, like getting in the back of a taxi cab with some guy. Like, it's just like you like start like thinking like that was good. And then on top of it, you like start to lose things because when you quit drinking and you change, like you shake up your world, you change how you identify, you change your friendships and you change like everything just starts to kind of like pull and you do lose things as you gain things. But the gaining comes, you know, down the line. And the best way I can describe it, there's the Marion Woodman quote, which is just like that sometimes we have to spend our time as forest dwellers, just like in like just out there in the middle of in between like what was and what will become, right? And so what I am telling you is that like you have enthusiasm coming into this, you're close to the pain, you haven't lost anything, and you are going to hit a point and you're going to be like, those were good times. And you're not going to remember what a hangover feels like, or what shame feels like, or what hating yourself feels like in this specific way. And you're going to be like, drinking, I could, you know, and you're also going to have controlled it for a while. And you're going to have this time that's going to come up and you're going to be like, I can control drinking and it wasn't that bad. And plus, like, those were good days. And like, also, I've lost a lot of shit. What am I doing? this is a thing. Just know this, you're going to encounter this. And so it's important to a degree to start this out by like maybe taking a picture of yourself, maybe writing down like some stuff that you like helps you get like stay really close to the pain. So you have something to go back to. And also just remembering that when we go through this, we do like walk away and we do have to lose things. We have to like, you know, lose sight of the shore to like see the new horizon or whatever that quote is. Number 15 is make this your life practice, not your life sentence. So again, coming back to something I've said like throughout this is that like everybody like deserves to be able to live the way that you're going to start living. Everybody should be so lucky to have this opportunity. This, what we're doing is not like I can never drink again, so I have to be in recovery forever. This is only about like living a life intentionally so that you feel free, so that you live free, so that you live in integrity, so that you live fully. This is like, it's a life practice. The things that we do here, the things we learn in this course, these are things that start to set us up and so that we have better lives, right? It's a life practice, not a life sentence. You don't have to do these things. You get to do these things so that you can live in a way that feels like that. Like, I mean, I'm not like the happiest person alive and like my life isn't perfect, but I will tell you, I live so free and it's because I practice these things. It's because I started down this path and I was forced to have to do things that people didn't have to do. And that's given me like, like the thing that we talk about, a life I don't have to escape from. Last is treat it as your great adventure. And so this is like I was just saying, like soul shaking work. This is the stuff that people write books about. Like this is the stuff. There's this, the intro to Eknath Iswaran's Bhagavad Gita, which probably just sounds like a bunch of gibberish. But the beginning of this, like one of my favorite texts is Eknath always, he translates a lot of old Vedic texts. And at the beginning of like, the Upanishads and the Dhammapada and this, the Bhagavad Gita, he's like talking about this like bird flying through a castle and like this, like the, like something about the bird leaves the castle and like, is just like having this breathtaking view of the world and is like, oh my God, like he's writing a postcard and saying, you know, like, I wish you could see this. I wish you could be here. So many of us have this experience where we just do this one thing. We make this one change and then this next change and then this next change. And this thing that we've heard about maybe our whole lives, this like reckoning or this realization or this depth or this wideness that we've just like only maybe encountered for like tiny seconds or whatever. It's just like all of a sudden it becomes so clear. And you realize like, oh my God, like this is like what people like this right here is what people like write poems about. And like the way that we learn to live by doing this work, by showing up in this way, by claiming our space, by doing the things that other people don't have to do. This is our great adventure. This is like the life that people wish they could live. My life is not like fantastic. I don't live in a castle or have a ton of money or like, but my life is fucking fantastic. And that's because I've freed myself from having to live within the rules that most people live by. Not all of them, but in such a way that like it can never be taken away from me. The stuff I have gained can never be taken away from me. And it is a total and great adventure. It is why I'm so passionate about like sobriety and recovery, because it's not just about drinking and it's not just about not drinking. And it's not just about doing meditation. It's about like exploring the like richness that's around us at all times and that's accessible to us. This is the way in. This is your great adventure. So enjoy.